Hey everybody, Jeff Kasouf, your host of Kickin' Back, and I'm excited to bring you this latest episode, which is a chat with Carly Lloyd. She's just retired from the United States Women's National Team and played her last game in the NWSL with NJNY Gotham FC. We chatted just a couple days here after that final game with Gotham, a 1-0 playoff loss to the Chicago Red Stars, and discussed some of the finality. You've heard her talk about her career, you've heard her reflect a bit, and we do plenty of that here. She does plenty of that here, but with the end is here, as she said, and it's finally the last game in the books, and we talk about what's next for her and some of the points of her career, which if you're listening to this, you probably know some of the Spark Notes, the Cliff Notes version of that, which the big goals, the 2008-2012 Olympic gold medal winning goals, the hat trick in the 2015 World Cup final, some big moments along the way that get a lot of attention. Don't focus too specifically in this podcast on any particular moment, but rather the career at large and how it evolved and some of her feelings on that individual journey, where the U.S. is now, where she thinks it needs to go as a program and a team, and some of what she's just looking forward to personally coming up. So I'll read off some of the resume here since we don't go into it in the fine detail in the actual podcast, in the conversation, but final tally on Lloyd's U.S. career, which went almost 17 years, 316 games played, 134 career international goals. That's third in U.S. history. That's currently fourth in all-time world history, and 64 assists to go with that. She won a pair of Olympic gold medals. She won two World Cup titles in 2015 and 2019. And she was twice named FIFA World Player of the Year, 2016 and 2017. And the list could go on. And those are the major points. But played her last career U.S. game in October. And just at the beginning of November here, played her final pro game period with Gotham in that 1-0 loss. So if you're listening to this, you're probably aware of some of that. You're probably watching along. Appreciate you listening along. And hope you take something new. I know, you know, Carly Lloyd's done plenty of these interviews. She's done a lot of self-reflection of late on her career. But hopefully you take away something new and different here and a little bit of insight from her. Appreciate her taking the time as she winds down in some of her final interviews here, at least for a little while. So go ahead and rate and review the podcast. Super helpful for us to help get the word out and get visibility to these interviews, which Kickin' Back is all about. Bringing you closer to and inside the minds of players, coaches, personalities, anybody involved in the world of women's soccer. Look to bring you that every week, bring you new and diverse guests as we go along here. And we've got another recording, our next one already in the books and recorded, a very different and still very interesting and important conversation upcoming. So you should also please subscribe to this podcast on whichever platform you are listening on right now or that you prefer to listen to. And check out equalizersoccer.com, subscribe there, become an annual subscriber. We've got a 50% off coupon at this moment if you're listening to this podcast around when it drops. And you can get half off your first year of premium content, of which there is plenty. So hope you enjoy this podcast. Hope you're checking out everything else that we're doing on the Equalizer. Thanks to Blue Wire Podcast for their support. Well, Carly Lloyd here on Kickin' Back. Carly, thanks for joining me after a busy stretch for you and a lot going on, obviously. So appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, no worries. Your Kickin' Back title of the podcast kind of resonates with me right now.
There you go. Enjoying a little bit of time. You know, that we're recording this a couple of days after the end, I guess. I think you said, you know, after that Gotham loss in the first round there to Chicago, this is the end and reality setting in. So a little bit starting to get the feel of relaxation a little bit, right? Is what you said.
Yeah, I woke up, you know, first morning today, kind of stress-free, not worrying about training or running. I mean, I will probably run the rest of my life, but for now I'm going to take some time to just chill.
Yeah. Do you think you'll be like a gym head or like in there running all the time and lifting and whatever for a while, or you think that'll be What do you think?
I think so. I think for me, running has sort of become therapy, you know, makes me feel good. I can kind of just zone out and go into a different world when I run. And yeah, I think from the running standpoint and just some strength work, I'll probably do that forever because I enjoy food. And obviously I'll probably be splurging a little bit more. So I don't want to gain weight. So I'm going to have to really kind of keep myself in check there.
Yeah. You got a few, almost two decades of making up for like passing on the whatever dessert or something that, you don't have to worry about now. Right. So, well, it is, you know, I'm curious just, you know, that you've done a lot of sort of talking about the end coming, you know, that arrived recently with the US farewell game, Gotham now, the season being over. So with it being here, just, you know, how are you doing in these first couple of days after? How are you kind of processing the arrival of that moment?
I think it's been, it's been, I don't know, since I announced my retirement middle of August, it's kind of been 2.5 months of a lot of emotions. I've been fortunate enough to have this sort of farewell tour. I don't, you know, see many athletes getting that. I don't see many athletes being able to dictate when they want to go out. Don't see many athletes being able to go out on top. Don't see many athletes being able to go out without a coach, you know, forcing them out or an injury. So I'm very fortunate with the ending that I've had. And I think for me, the biggest thing is, you know, just kind of hearing what people have to say, hearing the amount of people I've impacted. I don't really think that I've sat down and really processed my career and processed what I've done. You know, I've met several people that have come up to me, and I've been with some of my Gotham FC teammates just as of recently. And, you know, some people will come up and they'll be, you know, kind of very emotional and tearing up. And I'm like, I don't understand why these people are coming up being this emotional. And my teammates have said, well, you know, you have to understand the impact that you've had on people. You know, I don't think that you've really processed the impact. You know, you've changed people's lives. You've taught people lessons of never giving up. And I think that that's kind of what I've been processing most these last couple of months is just the impact that I've had on former teammates, current teammates, opponents. It's been amazing. And, you know, I think the biggest emotions was obviously closing out my national team career. There's no greater feeling than playing for your country. And I did it for 17 years and I had a lot of memories. So that was emotional. And then obviously just wrapping up my Gotham FC season with my teammates, a tremendous team. I'm just so proud of the group. And that's when it fully hit me after that game. You know, I couldn't contain my tears and it's sad. And, you know, I don't know that it's fully sunk in right now, to be honest. I'm sure there's going to be some waves of emotions coming, but it could not have been a better ending. And I'm just really grateful for everything.
I was at that farewell game that Gotham put on in Chester, just outside of Philadelphia, and not far from where, you know, you grew up in South Jersey, and a lot of a good crowd there, a lot of folks, as you mentioned, you know, that were there to see you. And I remember post game, I don't know the number, maybe it was a few hundred, 1,000, I don't, you know, but you were there. I think you were out there for maybe 45 minutes, came in to do media, went back out of people just kind of waiting around for you. And, you know, you made your way down the long line back toward the tunnel. Are those kind of the moments, as you mentioned, that I don't know, you've talked about appreciating some of these moments in these past few weeks in ways that you maybe haven't before. I don't know, you know, just in most cases, you wouldn't even have time to do that, right? In previous years and events.
Yeah, I think when you're at the end, you savor those certain moments. Like I said, I'm grateful to have had sort of the best of both worlds. For 17 years, I had tunnel vision. I blocked out the crowd. I blocked out all the distractions. I blocked out the noise. And these last several months, I didn't block out anything. I took it all in. I took the crowd in. I took the walk out to the stadium. I took the bus ride over to the game. And then I took in the post game as well. And the amount of just support that I've seen throughout the stadiums and signs that I've seen from fans and people writing in to my website and tweeting, it's been amazing. And I have wanted to take in every moment of that. And although that I haven't been able to get to every single person and sign every single person's item that they want signed or take a selfie with them, I did my best in the last several games I played in, and just super appreciative of all the support that I've received over the years.
I know you heard from some former teammates on top of current teammates. We saw some different, I think, social media posts from athletes, teams, you know, in different sports. Was there anything that stood out to you that was kind of cool for even like a sport crossover of athletes you heard from or anybody that you kind of heard from as this process went on?
Well, I think Gotham FC and the U.S. national team did some really amazing content around all of my games. You know, the Tom Brady video was pretty cool. I'm a big fan of his, and, you know, to be able to get him talking on video, I know he's incredibly busy, but that was really cool. You know, just everyone. I mean, it's been nothing I imagined. You know, I think that throughout my career, I've just been literally like scrapping and crawling my way to the top. And oftentimes have felt like I've been in quicksand. And to get to this point where I feel like my whole entire career, I've been proving people wrong. And it was almost like the minute I announced my retirement, I think everyone had kind of realized what I had done throughout my career. And it's just kind of a funny way to wrap up, you know, where there's just so many emotions on my end, but a lot of emotions on so many other people. So, yeah, I mean, all the support, former players, you know, men's players, it's just been unbelievable. It's more than I ever imagined an ending to be.
You mentioned that the emotions kind of hit you at the end of that Gotham game when that moment did arrive. I'm wondering, I had this conversation recently with someone, and there's the idea of like, with sometimes you have time, and you mentioned this just before, that not everybody's afforded the ability to know that it's coming or do it on their terms. And, you know, that you kind of have time to process it, which you can either use or maybe you don't want to use it and you want to wait till the end. Do you think that helped or hurt in any way? Because you had those couple months since you announced it, you know, obviously it must've been something to some degree on your mind for some time before that. So do you think that helped? Did you kind of wait and say, I'm not dealing with this until we get to that last game? Or
yeah, I knew deep down, you know, after the 2012 Olympics, I knew I wanted to go another two cycles. Obviously, the 2019 World Cup, you know, didn't go as well as I had hoped it had gone. It was just another part of my journey that was faced with a challenge. And, you know, I knew that I wanted to play until the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. I was going to do everything in my power to be ready and to make that roster. So I went in with it, you know, pretty much knowing that that was going to be the end. I didn't tell anybody. You know, Brian, my husband, I think knew. I think my family members kind of knew, but I just didn't want to take myself to that point yet. I wanted to get through Tokyo, focus on that. And then after Tokyo ended, you know, I just knew it was the right timing. You know, I think life is all about timing. For me, it's a matter of wanting to live my life, do the things that I've put on hold. And yeah, you know, when speaking with Aaron Heifetz about how we were gonna kind of approach the announcement of this, came up with a good plan of announcing it. And then, you know, giving fans the opportunity to come see some of my last games, to come support the team, national team and Gotham FC as well. And yeah, it just kind of gave me just so much time to appreciate things. And it was an emotional roller coaster. Once October hit, I feel like every week there was some sort of farewell thing going on. So the tears would come, and it was honestly, I feel so mentally shot because it's just been a lot to process, but I've been able to kind of savor every last little moment. And I think that's what's truly been really special.
Yeah, you had a October 14th, 2021 is Carly Lloyd Day in Delran, New Jersey, which I imagine was, it's maybe not you've got some World Cup titles, Olympic medals, Ballon d'Or, well, FIFA World Player of the Years, but there's something cool maybe about something local like that.
Yeah, it was a fantastic evening. Something I didn't expect as far as how big it was and how amazing of a ceremony it was for the town to come together, for my friends and family to be there. Very, very grateful for that. I have not forgotten my roots. I grew up in Delran. I trained on the local fields. I trained on Peter Vermees's field, who I actually just got to see when we played in Kansas City. That's where it all began for me. That's where it all started. And I'm very, grateful to have grown up in a town like that. Blue collar, mentality. Everybody knows everybody. It's very small, but that's where it started for me. And it was really special to be able to have that day and have that evening with everybody.
Yeah, I remember seeing some of that in that, was it 2014 that I was down in Medford there with you covering that for a story. And I think we were at a bagel shop that you waved a guy off. You said, I'm not eating like that anymore. I don't know if that was which town that actually was in, but.
Yeah, that was in Delran.
In Delran. So, I mean, you're still, it's not a big town. So you kind of have to choose when you go out if you don't want to get into a big conversation, right?
Yeah, it's, it's all part of it. Airports, being in Delran, being around here and the town I live in. It's really cool. It's great. I mean, some people stop me for photos, autographs. Some people just stop me and say, hey, thanks for all that you've done. And it's really special for me. It definitely is something I will cherish forever.
So, retiring here, after almost 17 years with national team and obviously the pro circuit, a couple different leagues even that have come and gone, and now hopefully this one obviously staying. I think one thing that maybe the casual fan that's just kind of looking at this and saying, okay, you're 39, you're retiring, but that's always been, as you've talked about, the fitness has never been an issue. You're still playing quite well and your fitness is there. It has been. So it's really, I think, you've talked about the mental side and kind of that burnout of late. Is that, do you feel like that kind of hit you? And that was the, look, it's time for that next chapter, because physically and everything, you could keep playing if you wanted to. Is that how you kind of feel?
Definitely. It's a lot. I've touched on it here and there in some interviews, but it is such a grind for me, to constantly prove people wrong up until, Tokyo and up until the moment I've announced my retirement. It's just draining, it's mentally exhausting. I think in 2020 being home, during COVID and my knee surgery, I was home for 10 months straight. I couldn't remember another time where I was home and had nothing really to focus on. And I just had this feeling inside of me, like I was nearing the end, because I just want to be home. I want to be home. I want to spend time with Brian. I want to spend time with my friends, my family. I want to do things. I want to ski. I want to, go run on a trail in my house and not worry about rolling an ankle because I've got to go play a tournament, soon. And I just was knowing that I was nearing the end and knowing that it's just so exhausting to be away from home, to live in hotels, to worry about making rosters, worry about, you know, all of the social media keyboard warriors, you know, just judging, filled with opinions, you know, it's just, it's a lot. And I can honestly say I've got zero regrets. I gave it all I had, and I can walk away just feeling really proud. But I think when you start to feel that, you know, you kind of know it's time. And I'm exhausted, man. I've been running on fumes, you know, these last several months, just filled with appearances, having to do extra running on my own, having to, you know, still compete, still play, still show up for my teammates, commute an hour and 40 each way up to Gotham FC. So yeah, I just, the tank is empty, and now I'm just going to enjoy all the hard work that I put in for all those years.
Do you feel like you're just going to like switch off, turn everything off, go dark for a while and just stay off the grid or what?
Yeah, I think these next several weeks, obviously gearing up for Thanksgiving and holidays are coming. Brian and I have a vacation scheduled the day after Thanksgiving, so I definitely plan to auto response my email and literally shut off the world, unplug. And then I think, you know, once the new year rolls around, I'll be ready to get after it. You know, I'll have stuff with my sponsors, endorsements and appearances, and you know, I'm sure some things with FIFA around Men's World Cup, Women's World Cup coming up. So there'll be opportunities, and I'm just going to kind of figure out what I'm passionate about. I think that's the biggest thing. I want to help. I feel that I've gone through so many different things and challenges in life where I can help people, and I enjoy helping people. I'm not sure what role that may be, but yeah, I think from now until the end of the year, just kind of lay low, enjoy the holidays, being home. First time in a long time, I don't have to prep for a January camp. So I probably don't have to find an indoor spot here in New Jersey and train out in the snow, run out in the cold. So it's a good feeling.
You know, your career recently, you know, the U.S., you walk away with that bronze medal in Tokyo. And, you know, I'm curious, you mentioned too a little bit in these interviews of the past few weeks and months of wanting that, you know, people talk about wanting to leave the game better than it was. And I think after the Gotham game on Sunday, you said, you know, I'd like for the maybe get involved with the team in some capacity. And down the road, like you just said, you're not sure what that looks like. And on the U.S. front too, you talked about wanting to see that culture be restored a little bit, that, you know, the team kind of maintain the podium that it's been on for so long. What has that looked like to you? What do you think maybe needs to be tweaked, improved, or what is that kind of, you know, your perspective on where things are with the U.S. going into another cycle? They just keep coming.
Yeah, I think, you know, for so long playing on the U.S., there has been this culture that has been a part of this team since the start. And it was all the pioneers, it was all the former players prior that started it. And when you came onto this team, if you didn't give your absolute best, and if you didn't work as hard as you possibly could for the greater good of the team and striving to win championships, you would fall off and you wouldn't be respected. And so when I first came onto the team, you know, I saw that culture. I was part of that culture. And I was someone who wasn't really on the radar. I was someone who wasn't pegged as the next best thing. And I had to work incredibly hard. And, you know, my article in the Players Tribune was true. You know, no one expected me to be what I was. No one except for myself, because obviously I was working towards that every day. And you know, I don't know anything better than giving it my all every single day and never taking being part of the national team for granted. Every single time up until my 17 years, you know, I would be nervous for an email to come in from our admin saying, hey, you've been selected to come into the camp. And I would feel a sense of pride and honor knowing that I'm going in to represent my country and represent the crest. And I just feel that from 2015 on, you know, I think success is a blessing and a curse sometimes, depending on how you use it. And we hadn't won the World Cup since 99 at that point. We had a lot of those players who were part of that culture for a number of years. And when we won in 2015, I felt like the success had maybe gotten to some people's heads a little bit. And you started to kind of see a little bit of a change in the culture and a shift in the culture. You know, I think it suddenly became more about the off the field stuff than the on the field stuff. And then winning in 2019, again, I think a little bit of a curse. You know, I think that it's incredibly hard to get to the top. It's even harder to stay at the top. And it's even harder to stay motivated for so long when you have success. 2020, Tokyo 2020, 2021 was disappointing for me to witness the culture shift, to see players not being grateful that they're there, not being honored, and not representing the crest in the way that it should, you know, day in and day out, busting your butt. And it showed, you know, we didn't play like a team. We didn't bring the grit. We didn't bring the mentality that has made this team so successful over the years. And that to me, you know, wasn't necessarily not winning gold. That to me was just so disappointing to see and feel, because I had seen it kind of coming. And unfortunately, it caught up with us and we weren't successful in Tokyo. We all had to kind of look ourselves in the mirror after that loss against Canada. We had a team meeting with the coaches. We had a players only meeting. Players spoke, I spoke, and I was the last to speak. And I just said that we need to find a way to win, you know, despite all of the things that we've been facing and feeling and not really playing well as a group, we have to find a way. And I must say, we came out better, you know, looking like the US, we had better mentality. Everybody was fighting, you know, players on the field, players coming off on the bench, and we earned that bronze medal. I'm so thankful that we were able to leave there with a medal, because our chances of leaving with a medal were very slim at that point. So it's a long-winded answer. My hope is that the culture does change. The culture goes back, and you've got some younger players coming up the pipeline. You know, my advice to them is, you know, you haven't done anything, you haven't made it. You have to work hard. You know, it is a grind every single day, and it's not going to be pretty sometimes, but you've got to stay the course. You've got to give it all you have for your country and represent the crest in the way that it is meant to be represented. And I hope that they find that culture back, because it's important. It's what's made us so successful all these years.
Yeah, you were the, I guess you're kind of one of the last bridges to that previous generation that you mentioned. There was the 99ers, and some of them played into, you know, deep into that next decade, I guess, when, you know, and you had already come into the scene at that point. So it is interesting, kind of the US, it's 30 years or so. Well, it's the 30th anniversary this month, actually, of the first World Cup. So there's been an ability to kind of bridge those gaps, and maybe in some ways, because careers lasted long enough and there were transition periods or whatever it might be, but certainly a young group coming in. We just saw the roster drop for the two games in Australia, a young group, and you know, some young, I guess, would you say players who are young now, but will now be sort of forced into a veteran type role. I mean, they have their players, maybe mid-20s, who have caps, that significant number of caps, but now they're going to be asked to be leaders in some way, right? So it'll be that's maybe the task you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you become a veteran with what you give to the team over the years, you know, for how long you've been there, what you've represented yourself as. I think the most important thing is that, you know, people don't try to be a leader just for the sake of being a leader. There's many ways of leading, you know, whether you're a new player, whether you're a veteran player. And I think the most important thing is being the best version of yourself, because if everyone's the best that they possibly can be, and they're taking care of themselves on and off the field, and they're doing all the right things, then collectively the team is going to be successful. So it's one of those things where, you know, you have to learn how to do that first before you can learn how to lead a group, essentially. And, you know, I think it is. It's a different generation of players. I think players kind of coming up to the pipeline, you know, maybe don't deal with adversity or rejection as well as sort of the older players. And that's going to be an interesting thing. You know, how can you figure out a way to dig deep? How can you figure out a way, if things aren't going your way, to keep pushing and not set limits on yourself? So I'm excited to see, you know, I'm going to be a fan, and hopefully if there's help that I could provide, I'm all for it. But I think the most important thing is for every single player to be the best version of themselves. No excuses, just get in there, get it done, work as hard as you can, and know that there's going to be a lot of things that are going to be thrown your way, a lot of challenges, a lot of obstacles, and you just got to navigate through it.
I wanted to ask you, you know, maybe a little bit less about a specific moment, because there are many of them. You've talked about them. 2015, there was the hat trick and maybe the tournament at large, you know, the two gold medal winning goals. You've talked about kind of 2012 and the way that tournament started and then ended. But maybe the thing that stands out, there's the stat, which again, maybe brings up age. I don't have it in front of me, but about 100 goals after the age of 30. I think it's 109. And some of that is your shift to forward. And I remember in 2015, as that was kind of happening in real time, and you were sort of looking at that move higher up the field. You know, you and I talked about it about almost 2 years ago already, of bringing that midfield mentality a little bit to the number nine role. But I'm wondering if you maybe just reflect on that journey of, you know, where you started 16, 17 years ago as probably just wanting a spot on the team, but as a midfielder. You know, then you come into this forward role and you play a number nine in a maybe a different way than most others, in that, and partly because of that midfield experience. And it's a unique path. I mean, there are players who have shifted. Michelle Akers is maybe the most prominent example of moving, you know, within some different positions too. But you know, you've been able to do that in so many different parts of that sort of front six. Does that give you any particular pride in terms of being versatile like that? And just how do you think, I know I've asked you this before, but I thought it was, you know, a really interesting answer, kind of how that shaped your overall vision approach to the game, that you were able to see it from different places.
Yeah, I think people do often forget how many positions I played, and I had to excel in every one of those positions. And if I didn't, I wouldn't have been part of the team. I would have been, you know, brushed aside and someone else come in and fill those roles. But I made it a point to be so good that they couldn't ignore me, no matter what position I was playing in. And I wanted to excel at it, and I wanted to be great at it. And so when I first came onto the national team, you know, I had just come out of college as a lazy player, you know, someone who just wanted to wait for the ball to come into the attacking third, and then I would turn my magic on. I didn't love defending. I didn't love tracking back. So I came onto the national team, and the way that the game was being played initially was a box-to-box midfielder, and you had two in the midfield. And when one went up, the other one just had to hang back. So you had to share the responsibility and I had to defend. So I not only had to get myself fit, but I had to learn how to become a two-way midfielder. And that's not easy for someone that wants to just attack all the time and just, you know, be putting on displays of magic. So I had to be very diligent and learn that for pretty much up until, you know, 2012. And I really pride myself in kind of not taking a shortcut and really learning the game and learning to become that two-way midfielder, because it essentially set me up for the rest of my career. And then as we, you know, evolved a little bit more, 2012, I was benched right before that. Shannon Box had gotten injured in the first game, who was more of the defensive midfield player, and the roles were a little bit more distinguished, where she would sit back and, you know, Lauren Chaney at the time or myself would get to, you know, be more of the attacking presence. Well, I was told that I wasn't good enough in the defensive mid role, so I couldn't play there. But I had to go in there and play for Shannon Box. And I did that all the way up until the final. I never left the field. Then Shannon Box came back in the final. And then I bumped back up to more of an attacking role player. And then after that, you know, having to play a little bit of outside mid, Jill in 2015, you know, put me outside mid. I'm going to be honest, I didn't love it out there. You know, I just felt like that wasn't really, you know, my natural position. So there was some experimenting going on. And then in 2015, you know, the media surrounding the World Cup was US doesn't look good. They're not going to get out of their group. And sort of this like unleash Carly theme was happening. And I was like all for it as well, because I just wanted to be able to do what I do best. And that's attack, create, unbalanced defenses. And, you know, thankfully we had some yellow card issues during that tournament and Jill had to change some things up and she essentially unleashed me. So I was able to go and do my thing. And then, you know, after that, sort of found myself in this number nine role. And, you know, what I have done best over the course of my career is score goals. I think the reason that the stat changed the older I got was, yes, it was a positional change. I moved higher up onto the field, closer to the goal, but I also became a more sophisticated goal scorer. You know, it wasn't always about just shooting from distance. It was finesse. It was being a sniper inside the box. It was getting in on crosses. It was placing balls with the inside of my foot. I mean, I worked rep after rep. I mean, a million reps of just shooting and just finessing all different types of shooting. So it was fun. You know, it kind of kept me on my toes a little bit. I had to evolve my game, but I think that initial being a two-way midfielder essentially set me up to appreciate defending. And when I moved into the number nine role, and it was super fitting with Lacko, with the way that he wants to high press, it was a natural fit for me. I mean, I love it. I love hunting down defenders. I love tackling. I love, you know, making people fear me running at them. It's a really cool feeling. It's almost as cool as scoring a goal.
Yeah, I will. I'll never forget the 2015 vibe, which maybe you won't either, just being in that sort of media pack and being there for the full 5 weeks or so. And that's kind of when that shift for you happened in the position. I imagine you probably won't miss having to do media much in this, as part of the career requirements.
It's, you know, media is what it is. It's hard. The narrative is something different than what actually is, you know, like, yeah. The narrative around me being too old and 2017 to 2019 and that I couldn't play a full 90 was just not true. So I kept trying to tell people, you know, as the fittest I've been, sharpest I've been, but unfortunately you media were listening to the narrative. So
well, the club game I want to ask you too before we go, because I think you had stretches there where there wasn't a pro league that you were playing, which is, you know, its own juggle and balance when you're on the national team and just trying to stay fit and stay sharp. You made a mention, which I guess it just, with everything going on, it escaped me a little bit, but you mentioned on Sunday after that Gotham Chicago game, like this was where you started your proper pro career, pro club career in Chicago. And, you know, WPS, you've talked about, you had some struggles, Chicago, you were at Sky Blue at one point in that league, when Gotham was Sky Blue, you know, NWSL, what, I guess, you know, in some ways, as a player who's kind of seen a world with no league, a league that, you know, in WPS was, by the end, was chaos in so many ways, and seeing a league here now that seems to be, you know, hopefully getting stronger and obviously dealing with some major issues off the field at the moment. But where do you see how things are now versus kind of at the beginning of your career in terms of the prospect for a really healthy club environment?
Yeah, it's been, you know, it's been interesting going through the WPS. I feel like the WPS was sort of trying to be like the first league, WUSA. And unfortunately, you know, you're just paying players too much and it just was not sustainable from that standpoint. And yeah, we only got 3 years out of that, which was unfortunate. We had some pretty amazing players who had come from overseas to play in that league, and it was really good. And I think that, you know, I think it's twofold. I think that the leagues around the world are getting a lot stronger, a lot better. So there aren't as many players who want to come over here into the NWSL. And then, you know, also it's from a money standpoint as well. But I think the model that's in place now has obviously been sustainable, has been better. I think that, you know, we're now, you know, sort of dealing with these off the field issues, but it's almost helping to reshape the proper way of running a league. You know, there needs to be, there's not even these horribly off the field things that have happened, but there's other things within this league that just need to be done better and right. And I'm a really big believer in the long game approach and just doing things the right way. And it may take more time, but you have to do it the right way. You know, if you want to build something great, you don't just skip a bunch of steps and hope that, you know, you can put band-aids on things and things will be successful. That's just not how it works. So, you know, I think that the two expansion teams coming in, obviously great for the league. With my time, you know, being playing for Sky Blue FC and then the switch into Gotham FC, I'm really happy that I ended my career with this group and with all the people that are part of this group and in the organization, because it just feels like a family. It finally feels like a club that is being run the way that it should be run. And it's almost a little bittersweet. I wish I had some playing years left, because I really love playing for Scott. I think he's a tremendous coach. Yael is doing a fantastic job, as well as so many other people within the organization. Ed, who has been a really hands-on leader and owner, which has been fantastic. So I'm really grateful to see where this club is going to go, and grateful that I was able to kind of end here the way that it is. And I know that it's only going to get better, which is fantastic. But I think from an overall league standpoint, there's going to be a lot of changes and a lot of things that hopefully continue to get better.
So I know you mentioned you've got a vacation coming up you're looking forward to. You've talked about spending some time with family, you know, focusing on family. Golf, I know, is a big part of you and your husband's lives. And I keep seeing, I just saw the Zelle commercial with you golfing. So I imagine that's going to be a big piece of it. You know, what anything that you're looking forward to? You got a course like in particular that you look forward to? Maybe you haven't played or anything like that?
I mean, we have, I've been in kind of plan mode, these last couple of months since I've announced my retirement. I literally haven't done much, you know. It's like I trained so much, and not only was I doing national team training and club training, but I was training on top of all of that on my own extra so many times. So, you know, if my husband's like, hey, you know, want to go play a round of golf, like it just doesn't seem enticing. Like it's the last thing I feel like doing is going to walk a golf course and go hit golf balls or do anything really strenuous. So I really haven't done anything. So yes, our first order of business is vacation the day after Thanksgiving. We're literally going to unplug, you know, make this vacation about us and really enjoy it and literally do nothing. So that's great. And then I've got some ski trips planned because I skied my whole life and then stopped skiing in 2005. So I think we're going to do some West Coast trips, Denver, Salt Lake. I've got a RV trip that we're in the midst of planning for next summer, going into like Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota area. But yeah, I mean, I'll probably join, you know, where my husband is a member at a course that's like 10 minutes from our house, play some golf, do some four wheeling. One of the gracious gifts that was given among a few other things that US Soccer presented me was some golfing in Pebble Beach. So we are going to be able to go to Pebble Beach, play. I think they've got a couple courses there, stay there. So yeah, that's going to be an unbelievable trip. And I think there's several US Soccer staff members who are wanting to tag along on that trip. but we're trying to get in all the travel we can, do all the things we want to do. And eventually with some time, you know, we'll start a family after that.
Nice. Nice. Well, you can make your pitch to be on one of those celebrity pro-ams, I think in Pebble Beach or some of them, right? So
I gotta get practicing, gotta get a little bit better.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, Carly, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're ready to unplug and you've been doing plenty of this. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Great chatting.
Thank you for listening to Kicking Back, a podcast brought to you by The Equalizer and now with Blue Wire Podcast. If you missed any of our great interviews from the past or you don't want to miss anything going forward, and I promise you that you don't, please subscribe on any platform you're listening. Please go ahead and rate and review our podcast. It really does help with visibility. That's that for this episode. We'll be back soon with another great guest from the world of women's soccer.